Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Coming up on show 692, we'll take a look at Ford's Mustang Mach-E progress and your question of the week answers too. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Well, I've been saying that for almost 700 shows, the beginning of every show. Wherever you are in the world, welcome to EV News Daily for Sunday the 9th of February. Martin Lee here, and I go through every EV story, so you don't have to. Yeah, 8 shows away from 700. Wowzers. Well, thank you as always to MyEV.com for helping make the show. MyEV in the US is a place where you can buy and sell and learn about EVs, and these days they're organising events as well. Hello to everybody, the hundreds of people who came along to EVs and Tea on Saturday at Basecamp Miami, and send me your pictures or tweet me and I'll retweet them. It looked like an amazing gathering. Tons of Teslas there as well. Wowzers. Okay, we'll kick off with news about BMW. BMW said a couple of days ago it's increasing production of its EV powertrain components at its plant in Dingolfing in Bavaria and raising its staff numbers to 1,400 this year from 600 at present. Says Reuters, responding to tougher emissions rules and the threat of a multi-million euro fine if car makers don't make enough EVs, or rather they make too many fossil gobblers. It's a fine system. It's kind of like an offset system. And this year, as the way that the kind of the taper is going to be working out, really, if you can sell one EV, if you're a car maker, you can probably get away with probably just about selling two big, dirty, profitable SUVs. Responding to the tougher emissions fines, car makers are stepping up efforts to sell their EVs and their hybrid cars as well. BMW aims for its electric cars to make up a quarter of new vehicle registrations by next year. The number of employees assembling electric motors at the Dingolfing plant will rise to 1,400 from the end of this year, and slated to grow to over 2,000 over the midterm, BMW added. Well, if you were eagerly awaiting the Volkswagen launch of the ID4, that's the all-electric crossover, in the United States, it appears you'll have to wait just a little bit longer. Initially expected to debut at the New York Auto Show mid-April, its reveal has now, looks like it may well have been postponed, and it could well be the Detroit Auto Show in June that we first see it, says Inside EVs. Well, Autocar magazine doesn't make the Detroit reveal a sure thing, though, and says it could even be towards the end of 2020. We don't know if VW is going to reveal both the, what's the regular ID4, that's the crossover. It used to be called the when they were making concept cars, it was the Cross with all the Zs. The ID4, it became, and the ID5. That is the coupe version of it. The latter is actually the model that was previewed by the Cross concept. It's kind of like, it goes ID3, they're launching that in Europe, and then in the US, I think ID5, then maybe ID4, or maybe 4 and 5 at the same time. It's a little confusing, and I study this all the time. Well, the ID4 and the ID5 will be the first VW models to bear the GTX badge. The GTX badge is the electric version of what they would say GTI. So the Volkswagen ID3, which is very much not an electrified Volkswagen Golf. Don't call it a Golf, whatever you do. I mean, it's the same size and shape and cost and weight, but it's not an electrified Golf. It's very much a new way of thinking about personal transport. It is the ID3, and they'll make a GTX version of that, just as they make a Golf GTI. Don't mention the Golf! It's definitely not an electric Golf. Well, moving on, and Tesla registrations in Germany have increased 168% in January, helped by strong demand for the Model 3, according to Teslarati. Well, Tesla's leading the pack of imported vehicles into Germany. That's a good sign for Elon Musk with the construction of Giga Berlin, as we now have to call it, by the way. He wants us to not to call it Gigafactory 1, 2, 3, 4, etc., but to be named after where it is. So it's now Giga Shanghai, Giga Berlin, etc., etc. Expected to start as early as mid-March, Tesla can only expect more organic demand. Giga Berlin going up from this spring and making cars next year. They've certainly got Giga Shanghai, which was a year to the day. A year to the day from that groundbreaking ceremony to when Elon went back there to have a look at the Model 3s they were making. Well, Tesla can only expect more organic demand in that market of Germany when they start making cars. Well, Germans, obviously, a very proud car-building nation. When the Germans start building Teslas in Germany, people will have that national pride and want to buy an EV that was made on their doorstep. Well, Tesla plans to start production from Giga Shanghai on Monday the 10th of February, which could well be today when you're listening to the podcast. And that's all because of the coronavirus outbreak. The Tesla factory in China actually shut down on February the 2nd, according to International Business Times. Well, the Tesla vice president, Tao Lin, announced this week that the factory will be resuming its operations on Monday 10th of Feb. However, deliveries of the cars would be taking a hit. On Saturday, yesterday, the Shanghai government stated it would consult banks and ask them to give loans with manageable interest rates to businesses and certain exemptions to companies in the hospitality sector from value-added taxes, those kind of companies that are being hit by coronavirus, and also foreign firms to get aid. And Tesla could well be on that list, a bit of financial support for any cars, any break in making Model 3s. Moving on to trucks, and have you heard of the truck maker Iveco? Well, the Iveco owner is a company called CNH, and they have done a deal with Nikola. Ah, yes, Nikola Motor, everyone's favourite hydrogen truck maker, who these days talk a lot about the fact they're going to make battery trucks, and, oh, very much hydrogen one day. But all of a sudden, they seem to have pivoted to going like, yeah, hydrogen's coming, but look at the batteries we're doing. Well, Nikola Motor will build the Nikola Tray in battery electric form at the Iveco plant in Germany. The first e-trucks to go into production will be next year. They're going to be all electric battery versions. There will be a fuel cell version planned sometime in 2023, they say. According to Electrive, the two partner companies have formed a joint venture company, and that company is called Nikola Tray, the same as the truck, which this new company will manufacture the pure battery electric model with a modular battery that can be configured up to 720 kilowatt hours. Well, the first electric drive has a maximum continuous output of 480 kilowatts that they're making, and production is expected to start this time next year. Well, the first quarter of 2021. Of course, Iveco know how to make trucks, and so Nikola are doing a lot here to climb several rungs of the battery electric truck ladder. At the same time, the Nikola Tray, which has been adapted for the European market. Yeah, we have lots of different regulations and rules and regs over here in terms of trucks. When the first Nikola truck was demonstrated, they said that it will look different, by the way, in Europe. And so the third one has very little in common with the US models that you may have seen. It's based on Iveco's own platform, the S-Way platform, with Nikola doing the electric bits. I've seen people saying a similar thing about the Tesla semi-truck as well. Some people have been looking at the trucks that have been driving around the US, the first couple of prototypes, and saying, actually, with European truck regulations, they may have to make a tweak here and there. I don't know enough in depth. Well, maybe it's a research topic I can get involved in before the Tesla semi comes to Europe. It's going to be a while yet, though, isn't it? Okay, let's move on. A story today from the newspaper The Sun in this country, which has had a, let me be diplomatic, a checkered history. Drivers could save more than £40,000 just by switching to an electric car, says The Sun. Let me fill you in, by the way, if you're not listening in this country. The Sun is a mainstream newspaper but it's a mainstream newspaper that is not exactly gonna trouble your brain cells. Let me put it that way. I'm trying to be diplomatic, and many people would say, don't waste your time being diplomatic. It's not exactly going to challenge you. So it's interesting that this kind of story has made its way into those kind of newspapers, because those kind of newspapers, you know, typically, the kind of people that would typically read them, being careful what I say here, are the kind of people that, you know, normally would those kind of EV bashing stories have appealed traditionally to people who don't want to think about, you know, new ways of driving, new ways, all those kind of things. Like, interesting that The Sun is running articles now. Goodness me, whatever next, it'll be the Daily Mail. You wait for the story that I'm going to read you next. Switching to an electric car could save £40,000. A new investigation has revealed it comes after Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, announced a complete ban on petrol and diesel models from 2035, and that includes now hybrids as well. Moved it forward by 5 years and have banned hybrids. That's a big, big move, and that is the bigger... Everyone went mad on the date, 2035. Actually, the bigger thing is that it's got to be pure electrics or another form of zero-emission power, hydrogen, etc. Says The Sun, recent data from EDF Energy found Brits could save £41,000 in fuel over the lifetime if you get an electric vehicle. Drivers, on average, spend about £56,000 in our lifetimes filling up our car with petrol and diesel, but with an electric car, you'd spend about £15,000 equivalent and save £40,000. And so, okay, let's move on. That next story that I told you about, another newspaper coming around to the way of EVs all of a sudden. You know, because, you know, a lot of these newspapers, they are very good at selling lots of copies. Well, some of them not so much anymore because newspapers are in decline. But in other words, they print what they know will be popular with their readership. And so it's interesting that a typical readership who before would have been anti-EV, so many stories in the mainstream press being pro-EV, well, obviously, look, these newspapers aren't stupid. They're not going to print stuff that doesn't sell. That's all I'm saying. Interesting comment on wider culture, possibly, if you want to make that leap, that more and more people in the mainstream are coming round to how you and I think. Well, there's potentially, however, something of, in this country, a financial game changer, let me use that cliche, for driving an EV. And it could save you up to 42% of your monthly cost of driving a car. The key to this is a thing called salary sacrifice, the same system that employers use for pension. So, for instance, say you earn... Let's just make it... Say you earn £1. Say you earn £1 and you put some money into your pension. That money goes into your pension before the government get their grubby little hands on your money for tax. And so... would this work where you're listening around the world? I know I've got listeners to this podcast in most countries around the world. Do you have a similar system, possibly? We call it salary sacrifice. In other words, you sacrifice a bit of your salary off the top, you skim some off the top, you put it onto a certain scheme, and that could be, you know, your pension. It comes out of your pay packet before you even see it. So your employer takes it away, but they are allowed to put it in a place pre-tax. Things like cycle-to-work schemes, childcare vouchers. Effectively, they're tax-free, says Simon at thisismoney.co.uk. He says that it saves you both national insurance and income taxes, which is up to 42%, more actually if you're a super high-rate taxpayer. But a special exemption was put in place for electric cars for people to swap out their fossil gobblers for EVs. And so, what changes in April... the other tax that you used to get for having a company car, because in many ways they sort of gave with one hand and took away with another, that second one is also going. It's called benefit in kind. And so now you can have a company car, which you can use for personal use, a benefit in kind, and it's going to 0%. And so those two things combined, sacrifice some of your salary before it gets taxed, your employer organises the lease of a car, and that's... it's taxed at 0% as well, and you can use it for personal journeys. It all changes in April, and when you add those two benefits together, the monthly cost of a Tesla Model 3 Standard Range Plus over 48 months would be roughly £530. Under salary sacrifice, with the new benefit in kind changes, it goes down to £300 a month. Work out what you used to spend in petrol and diesel, and maybe you spent £150... I don't know, on your fuel. Well, then take that off as well. Now, I'm not saying you should buy a new car because new cars go down in value. I'm not saying you should lease a car, because lease companies all have staff, photocopiers, lights, you know, they all... Lease companies aren't charities, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not recommending you go to a lease company, I'm not recommending you buy a new car, but look at the maths, and it could possibly work in your favour. I'll pop a link in the article if you want to read more. And you know what I really need to do, especially for my UK listeners, a show all about this that digs deep so that my listeners around the world that might, you know, like, okay, a whole show about this, they might be like, I'm not going to listen to that one. But maybe you would be curious and you would be interested with this work in Australia or the US. What do you have in, for my European listeners, what happens in the European countries? Do you have a similar thing? I'd love to know, and you can email me anytime at hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, which European countries have the most electric chargers? Well, Germany, in a new survey, takes the number one spot with over 5,000 DC fast chargers. The UK comes second with over 4,000 DC fast chargers. Then it's Norway, which is third, but a much, much smaller country than Germany and the UK. Then France, geographically a much bigger country, that's got 2,000 DC fast chargers. Then it's Spain, the Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, Italy and Austria. So NATSO and ChargePoint are getting together in the USA. ChargePoint has more than 108,000 EV charging stations, and the NATSO, the Trade Association for Truck Stops and Travel Plazas, are collaborating to build out a network of 4,000 charging stations at truck stops in rural America, says FreightWaves.com website. The two are going to use money from Dieselgate's emissions scandal settlement and some grants from owner investment as well. It's around $1 billion to knit together a DC fast charging network at truck stops and plazas. ChargePoint and NATSO will work together to identify sources of income to do the rollout. The deadline is February 26th to get the applications in for the Dieselgate money, set aside by VW from its 2015 diesel emissions cheating admission. The funds have been made available to build chargers for doing a very, very, very bad thing. And finally, final story today, in an Electrek exclusive, Electrek met with Darren Palmer. He's the product chief of Ford EVs, and they've been asking what the latest is with the Mach-E. Close to sign-off, by the way, for vehicle engineering. He confirmed that Ford is going to go for 300 miles of range on their long-range version, says Electrek. He also explained the customer focus groups they've been running revealed that 300 miles is that golden number that consumers think they want to buy an EV. They want to see 300 miles. And hitting that number, he said, is an important strategy for converting Ford's fossil-gobbling owners to EV. He confirmed that 80% of the Mustang Mach-E pre-orders are for the long-range model, which does 300 miles. Of course, the lower-cost versions will do anything from 210 onwards. All Ford EVs, starting with the Mach-E, but presumably all Ford EVs, are going to come with a portable Level 2 240-volt charger in the boot of the car. It's going to come with the car, and that would be a really, really smart move to help people charge their cars. And well done, Ford. Good move. Not a cheap thing to do when you do it on the scale that they will be wanting to do it on. But fantastic nonetheless. They're going to put a Level 2 240-volt portable charger in with every car to eliminate that question about how do I charge at home. And you might want to put a wall box on your wall, but you might just want to use this to charge the car slowly. They're also... this chap said to Electrek, Darren Palmer from Ford, said that the teams within Ford are currently all taking all-electric road trips around the USA to learn for themselves about what it's like to drive an EV long distance. He said that any problems are documented and fed back. And, you know, that's kind of interesting because so many people said for a long time, once all of these big car companies start making EVs, Tesla's doomed. You know, Tesla's been doing this for 10 years plus. But once everybody else starts, oh, they're going to be doomed. But of course, what that reveals is that all the other car companies, whilst they're very good at making cars, have been doing it for 100 years, they know how to make a car efficiently. They're having to do things like get in an EV and drive somewhere and learn for themselves what it's like. And all of that is a standing start. Obviously, you can employ people from Tesla, you can poach people, you can hire talent. But for the large part, it's a culture shift, it's a culture change in massive companies. And it's not going to be easy. But well done to Ford for doing the legwork and the hard yards on that one. Okay, question of the week. My goodness, it's going to be a long podcast today. I'm sorry if this gets too long. I'm so sorry. There's so much good news around EVs. I just want to bring it all to you, but I try and filter it down. Question of the week this week was asking you on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all, how much the environment played when you bought an EV, or will it play when you buy an EV? Martin Young says the main reason I purchased a Chevy Volt was because it was time to replace an old worn-out car. Didn't want to replace it with old technology. I was concerned about the environment, but probably a 5. And then something happened after driving the Volt for a few weeks and no longer making trips to gas stations. Noticing all the fumes coming out of other cars, I realised I wasn't spewing toxins from my tailpipe. And now, it's a 10. And this reveals a truth that we should never lose sight of. The easiest and most effective way to change a person's attitude is first to change their behaviour. Wowzers. Somebody put that on a t-shirt. What a quote. The easiest way, the effective way to change an attitude is first to change your behaviour. Good man. I like that. I'm gonna write that one down and use that again. I love it. Doug Butcher says, when I found out a few years ago about the terrible air quality in cities, I knew I would go electric. However, only when I had a drive in a friend's Leaf that I decided to take the plunge. That was September 2019. I'm now the proud owner of a Leaf. Well done, Doug. The environment is a consideration, but mostly it's about savings. Munivere says, I would love to own an EV for environmental reasons, so I'm a 10 out of 10, but I live in Australia. We have a limited range of cars available. Peter Mooney says, I bought an EV for environmental reasons, mostly about air quality. The running costs were a close second, but I doubt I would have bothered changing if I didn't care about the diesel fumes. John Harkham says, for me, environment was a 1 out of 10. I just wanted the tech of an EV. My wife wanted a Mini, so when EV Mini was announced on your show, we were on board and straight into the dealer to order one. It's due this April. Oh, man, John and your wife, you are going to have a great time in that Mini. That is stylish. That's a nice car. That's a big car as well. I was having a look at it. It's anything but Mini. You know, you get a lot in there. And, of course, it's, you know, basically a BMW, so fantastic. Oh, great. Keep me updated with how it goes. Stuart Jackson says, my decision to move to an EV is entirely motivated by environmental considerations. I use my car a lot for work and feel guilty about environmental damage. Jim Baxter, great show. I would say I'm a 10. The biggest reason is environmental issues that I drive a Hyundai Ioniq EV. I already have a hybrid because it's easy and fun to drive. I was going to replace it with a hybrid plug-in 6 months ago, but I went full EV for the environment. Mark Garnett says, environmental reasons was absolutely not my reason. That's a number one. However, my awareness and interest in environmental issues right now is right up there. Asir says, I do high mileage and feel that switching to an EV does mean my emissions has an effect. However, financially, an EV for a high mileage person makes more sense than any other solution. Phil Kemp says, I'm a 7, but my wife is an 8. Other factors include the need to replace an ICE, the need for something more restful to drive, the desire for something different. John Frewarth says, number one, it's wanting a dream car. That's about 60% of it. Number two, it's wanting the best car that he could get on a used car market. And the third reason was environmentally friendly. Darren Findlay says, I'm a 9 out of 10. Environmental impact of dyno juice propulsion was my primary reason for going EV. I went veggie as well 2 years ago. That said, I do love the tech. Tom Raftery says, in my case, it was a 10. I moved to Spain in 2008 and needed a new car. At the time, my filter for cars was all about the emissions. The best option available was a Prius. But now, I'm the proud owner of a 40 kilowatt hour Nissan Leaf and a 5 kilowatt solar array. Peter Brin says, climate change is the absolute top of my list for being an EV enthusiast and buying the Volts. To solve climate change, we must address coal, oil and gas used in the power grid where alternatives exist. Nuclear, wind, solar. So cleaning the power grid isn't a technical challenge, it's a political one. Mark Richards is the final listener today that I'll read out. Oh my God, so many more. Just heard your question of the week. The decision to buy my Bolt and my Volt, similar to you, it's on the list, but not number one. Maybe 1 out of 10, 10%. First of all, it's fun. Secondly, technology. I'm a nerd, I love all things tech. Third was how much money it would save. And fourth, it was quiet. Fifth, the environment, he says. Thank you, Mark. Thanks to everyone. I had more emails than I could possibly read out. And I think that's interesting because I was, you know, I felt guilty last week sharing, honestly, that the environment wasn't the number one reason that I bought an EV. It was all part of the mix, but it wasn't the sole reason. And it seems that, you know, a lot of time people are kind of playing up that side of it, and for me it was like, they're great cars, they're cheap, my wife was on board, we could afford that one. There was lots of reasons. Environment wasn't number one, kind of number four or five maybe, but as soon as I bought one, it started to go up the list. And the more that I drove it, the further the environment went up the list of reasons why I would always drive an EV now. So it's interesting how things change, isn't it? Okay, let's move on and set a brand new question of the week. So, I told you a moment ago about Ford engineers having to get up to speed pronto by taking EV road trips and learning what it's like. So, my EV's question of the week this week is along those lines. You see, I'm personally thinking of driving to Italy in the next couple of months. It is 1,028 miles from my house. It'll take 17 hours, according to Google Maps. I will drive to the Channel Tunnel. Then I'll go to France at Calais. I'll skirt the bottom of Switzerland after driving straight down France. I'll arrive in northern Italy, drive past Milan, and then I'll arrive in Pisa, where we have friends who live on the coast there. So what's the longest EV road trip you've ever done? Because I'm nervous about it. I mean, I know we can do it, but I'm nervous about it. And I've never done such a long trip in different countries. So the UK charging, fine. France and Italy charging, okay. I've got somewhere that I can charge when I'm there. So I'll have some destination charging. And our friends, they're Italians. So they live in, you know, at their house. But a 1,000-mile journey down through Europe, have you done it? Have you done a long journey across the US or Australia? And if you don't own an EV yet, what's the long... Or maybe if you do own an EV, but you've never done a road trip, what's the longest road trip you would do? Interesting question. Email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com. Leave a comment on the YouTube. Thank you to 231 patrons of the podcast. If you didn't go to patreon.com/evnewsdaily, I couldn't do this. patreon.com/evnewsdaily. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby. Thank you, Brad. That's more than a year now Brad supported at that level. That's insane. What a legend. And Avid Technology as well. And all my partners too, like David Allen in New Zealand. They've got OEM Audio and evpower.co.nz. Paul O'Connor. There's tryev.com in this country, and Gareth Hamer, and also eMobility Norway. Check them out, eMobilityNorway.com. And, of course, all my exec producers, I love to read your names out because it just, for me, it's the least I can do. Alan Robson, Alan Shedd, Alex Banahini, Alexander Frank, Anders Hove, Andrea Jefferson, Asir Khalid, Ashley Hill, Bjarne Fuchstack, Brent Kingsford, Brian Thompson, Brian Weatherall, Bruce Bohannon, Charles Hall, Chris Hopkins, Colin Hennessy, Craig Coles, Craig Cooper, Craig Rogers, Damian Davis, Darren Bird, Darren Feach, Darren Sant and Yorkshire EVs, Dave Jewson, David Barkman, David Finch, David Partington, David Prescott, Derek Riley, and the Dublin EV Owners Club, Don McAllister from ScreencastsOnline.com, Enrico Stefanchillo, Frederick Rovick, Free Jewel, aka James, Gene Rubin, Jeff Lowe, Ian Griffiths, Ian Sear, Jack Oakley, James Storr, Jerry Allison, Jim Morris, John Bailey, John Lacey of Click Clack Video NZ, John, who's Beardy McBeardface at Ken TV's, John Nodell, Juan Gonzalez, Ken Morris, Kevin Mayerson, Carl Mayen, Lars Dallager, Lawrence D. Allen, Lee Brown, Luke Cully, Marcel Lohman, Marcel Warden, Mark Bossett, Marlon Shell, Matt Piscioni, Matthew Ellis, Maz Shah, Mia Opelstrup, Michael Pastroni, Michael Cuffin, Mike Rogers, Mike Winter, Nathan Gore-Brown, Neil, Neely Roberts at Sussex EVs, Northern Explorers, Ohad Aston, Paul Ridings, Paul Shelley, Paul Stevenson, Perry Simpkins, Pete Glass, Pete Gorton, Peter and Dee Roberts from Oxen EVs, and a new addition to their family, Little Evie. Congratulations. Phil Mouchet, Pontus Klinbad, Rajiv Narayan, Ralph Jensen, Rene Schneider, Rob Cooling at appledriving.co.uk, Rob Hermans, Robert Grace, Robin Tanner, Rupert Mitchell, Sari Kangasodja, Saiki Payne, Stephen Penn, Steve John, Stuart Hanna, Thomas J. Tias, The Plug Seekers, Evie YouTube channel, Tim Gutteridge, and William Langhorn. If you would like to support me as well. Maybe a posh coffee once or twice a month is all that you'd have to pass up, and in return you get to make a show that hopefully educates and informs and maybe entertains thousands of people around the world every single day. On this programme, we know that we're converting more people to clean green transport, and we are a smidge away from 2 million downloads of this podcast. And all of it is thanks to my Patreon supporters. Couldn't do it at all without you. So thank you for those that support this show. I am eternally grateful. If you want to catch up on the social, search EV News Daily. Have a wonderful day. Catch you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.